Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode number 346. Welcome back to the program. This week on the show, we've got a few pieces, as well as illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison stops by for another amazing segment of the Masonic Minute. In the news this week, wanted to mention, give a shout out to brother Travis Simpkins, who not only had a piece for the Midnight Freemasons, which if you have not read, you should read, it is fantastic, but also was featured in the Scottish Rite magazine, where he was able to show off a few of his paintings were in there, and just really cool. Travis, if you're listening, thank you so much for your contributions to the Midnight Freemasons, but also for doing everything that you do. If you read his bio, it's pretty incredible. He does a lot of Freemasonry, and he does a lot of artwork. Of course, he's a freelance artist. His stuff is worldwide. So, Travis, two thumbs up I'm giving you on the other end of this microphone. You can't see it, but thanks for all you do, man, and a great job on your stuff. Wanted to say thank you to everybody out there who has been supporting this program. Thank you so much. Those of you who go to WCYpodcast.com and hover over that support the show tab, you guys are the ones who make this show possible. So thank you so much for being producers, fellows, partners, and contributors. We really can't do this without you. Thank you so much. All right, well, the first piece I have for you this week is kind of a return to a concept or an idea or a set of items that we have talked about in at least three previous episodes. And this is, of course, one of my favorite topics, the two pillars. There is quite a bit of symbolism in this paper, and it talks about some of the ancient usages of these pillars. So here we go, The Two Pillars by H. Jordan Roscoe. 32nd degree, in the New Age, January 1964. The Fellowcraft is introduced to the wonders of his world of art and science through portals flanked by two massive pillars. Detailed description of these pillars in the Books of Kings indicates a style of a design common to Egyptian architecture, where a pillar terminates in a capital representing a conventionalized lotus blossom, or the seed pod of the sacred lily. Such twin pillars are frequently found among Egyptian and Sumerian archaeological remains. The pillars of King Solomon's temple, and in fact, that entire group of structures, were the work of Phoenician artists, according to the biblical account. From other sources, we gather that these same designers and craftsmen, initiated Dionysiac architects, were responsible for the magnificent palaces and temples at Byblos, the culture and aesthetic center of ancient Phoenicia. The Phoenician realm occupied an area roughly the same as that of modern Syria and Lebanon, and in biblical accounts is usually called Tyre, from the name of its then capital city. Byblos, also known as Gubal or Gebal, the present-day village of Jabil, was particularly famous for architecture and sculptors. The twin pillars symbolize the dual nature of life and death, positive and negative, or rather active establishment and passive endurance, male and female, light and dark, good and evil, uniting in a central point of equilibrium, the apex of the equilateral triangle, a circle between two parallel uprights. Isis represented standing between two pillars of opposing polarity. The Ark of the Covenant between two cherubims, Christ crucified between two thieves, are all symbols of the same Trinity, the completeness and perfection of deity. That the twin pillars resemble the conventional symbol of Gemini, third sign of the zodiac, is no accident, but rather due to the common ancestry of the two apparently unrelated symbols. In some lectures, the pillars are said to be 35 cubits high, the height given in 2 Chronicles, King James Version. Another version of the same source gives that the height is 120 cubits. Since the height of the first, or outer chamber, was probably no more than 30 cubits, the measurement given in 1 Kings, 18 cubits, seems more likely to be correct. The addition of map globes atop the pillars is modern invention, with little biblical or other authority, and serving little purpose but to permit the lecturer to harp upon the advantages of studying astronomy, geography, etc. Worthy pursuits, but wholly unrelated to the symbolism of the pillars. Whether the three chambers of the temple were connected by stairs is debatable. The best informed scholars believe the temple roof was flat, in which case the successively decreasing heights of the chambers plus the somewhat sloping configuration of the site would require approach and connection by means of either stairways, or of some sort of a ladder and trapdoor arrangement. Certainly, the fantastically elaborate, many-storied versions of the temple depicted by some well-intentioned but ill-informed biblical illustrators and Masonic artists are so illogical and at variance with the few known facts and testimony of both the Bible and history as to seem the figments of a disordered imagination. Josephus stated that the temple was of Grecian style, which implies entablature, and consequently a flat roof, although he had the cart before the horse, since Greek architecture was derived from Phoenician, not the reverse. In any case, the stairway of our lecture is purely symbolic, consisting as it does of the significant number 3, 5, and 7. In such a series, 3 symbolizes such qualities as peace, friendship, justice, piety, temperance, and virtue, 5 represents light, health, and vitality, and 7 is a symbol of control, judgment, government, and religion. All right, I hope you enjoyed that. Now, I can tell you for sure that we covered the pillars in episode number 288, in episode 318, and episode 192, and also in 196. To my knowledge, we have not read this paper, although it seemed slightly familiar while I was reading it. I couldn't say whether I have read it in the past, so after 346 episodes, hopefully this was a new one. It did sound slightly familiar, but I wanted to pop it in the show anyway, if nothing else, a refresher on the pillars. Before we go any further in the episode, I did want to go ahead and recognize Brother Daniel Reed. A few weeks ago, we had on Brother George R. Adams. I should say illustrious Brother George R. Adams, who was a past Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of the District of Columbia, and he talked about truth. And in the past, he had come out with a book called A Trilogy, Inner Journey to the East, Meditations of a Master Mason Along the Way, and Masonry for the Millennium. Now, George gave us some wonderful insights on the concept of truth and how Masonry works with that. And we went ahead and we asked a question on Facebook, on Tumblr, on Twitter, on all the social media outlets. And I said, give me reasons why you meditate or the benefits of, or something along those lines. And we had close to 60 entries and I read every single one of them. Now, the winner was going to receive an autographed copy of this book, which has been officially out of print for years. The winner was going to get a copy from George's personal library, autographed by him, and it's a really great book. My favorite part is the Meditations of a Master Mason Along the Way. Obviously, I'm very internalized. I love meditation. In fact, just before this episode was recorded, I was in a 1 hour and 10 minute meditation session, and after reading all of the responses, I thought, wow, these were all so great. Now, of course, some of them I disqualified right away. Some people commented right off the top like, oh, this is another great book. Well, that's not really what I was asking. I wanted to know how meditations helped you. So we had several people answer that specific question. And once I weeded out non-responses or just statements, we were left with folks, 60 people who had specific instances of how meditation have helped them. And I highlighted a bunch of them and I sent them over to my wife, Corey. And I said, Corey, can you take a second and read this PDF and just read the highlighted ones? Those are the ones I'm concerned about. And let me know who should get this book. And my wife said, you have to give it to Daniel Reed. And so I read Daniel Reed's again, and I have to agree. So congratulations to Daniel Reed. I sent out your book this morning, or yesterday morning if you're listening to this on Sunday. Dan wrote his response was good enough to merit sending this book, and I think you'll all agree. He says, I don't, RJ. He doesn't meditate. As a new initiate to Freemasonry, I'm not sure where to begin. I haven't been introduced to Masonic meditation as of taking the obligation of our Fellowcraft degree. After listening to your interview with George R. Adams, I was inspired to take down the name of the book to search the internet for a copy. If I don't win, I'll be looking forward to the author's new book rehashing on the subject. And that was it. So after reading everything, I thought, and my wife also, Daniel Reed was the guy to get this book. He needs it. And so, Brother Daniel, thanks so much for taking a part in our quote-unquote little game. And I hope you enjoy the book. Again, congratulations. All right, next up, I've got a great piece coming from the Midnight Freemasons, and it's by Worshipful Brother Gregory J. Knott. You may also know him as a member director for the Masonic Society. Without further ado, golf numbers are down 2. by senior Midnight Freemason contributor, Worshipful Brother Gregory J. Knott. Our local newspaper, the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, had a front page story today about the status of golf courses in the area. Many of the courses are hurting financially because the number of rounds played is down. Paper reported that nationally, more than 5% of all golf courses have closed since 2005, and the number of participants has declined from a high of 30 million in 2005 down to 23.8 million in 2016. In our area, one course is already closed, and a couple of others are on the verge of closing as well. One course was sold and reopened as a 12-hole course. One of the owners of the course was quoted as saying, "It's a different world. People are busy now. So we think that 12 holes is the place to be. They don't have time for 18, said Percy, whose group runs the only 12-hole course in the area. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Here at the Midnight Freemasons and on numerous other blogs and podcasts across the internet have been filled with articles on how to improve Freemasonry, how to get new members, how to make things easier, getting back to the basics, etc. Freemasonry is not alone on feeling the changes in society. At times we are very hard on ourselves about what is wrong with Freemasonry, but for all of the things that could be improved in the craft, I personally believe we have a very awesome organization already in place. Just as societal changes have impacted golf, they have also affected this fraternity. But we are adapting, and positive changes are happening in the fraternity across the nation. A renewed focus on education has taken hold in many lodges. The fraternity is on a path to return to our roots and focus on what we do best, making good men better. I am firmly convinced that the greatest day in this fraternity is today. We have a long, rich history as a fraternity, but today is what matters. I have seen the difference this fraternity has made in the lives of countless members, including myself. That's happening across the nation every day when a lodge meets, initiates another brother, or is helping out the community. Make today count. Go to your Blue Lodge meetings, invite back a brother who hasn't been there in a while, give a petition to a deserving potential brother, write a paper for a lodge education night, or visit another lodge to meet some new brothers. Just as the golfing industry is adjusting, so is Freemasonry, and we will be stronger for it. Gregory J. Knott, past master of St. Joseph Lodge No. 970, St. Joseph, Illinois, plural member, Ogden Lodge No. 754, Homer Lodge No. 199, and Naval Lodge No. 4 in Washington, D.C. And I have to agree with Brother Greg in this respect. As Freemasonry concerns itself with the primary mission of making good men better, and starts to distance itself from the idea of counting members at all, which is completely necessary if we are going to be serious about quality over quantity, we just have to stop counting. I would quote John Bizek from our recent trip to Kentucky with the Masonic Roundtable when he said, "They're working on making their lodge smaller." I find that fantastic. They're focusing on their members so much that they're making a real difference, and Freemasonry in that lodge is stronger because of it. He said something to the effect that will stick with me forever. He said, It's hard to love Joe Smith if you don't know or have never met Joe Smith. And I find that true. We have to know our members really well. And I think what Greg says here is he just reiterates this fact that we are doubling down on our efforts to make a difference in Freemasonry. So many of us are out there. There's over 30 Masonic podcasts, guys. Really, it's true. Whether they were out in the past or are brand new, some are not being made anymore. But the files are still out there and you can download them. It just shows that so many guys are taking advantage of how our fraternity is adapting for this century. And today is the strongest day of Freemasonry. So keep it going and get to lodge and do all of the masonry. Just do it all. And I don't mean spread yourself thin. I don't mean make your wife or your husband mad that you're going to meetings all the time. But what I should say is that we need to dedicate ourselves to living Freemasonry in this way. And when we are at lodge, it needs to be awesome. And I think we're doing that. So just a big kudos to all the members out there who make it happen every single day. And next, let's go into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison.
Born in Virginia in 1752, George Rogers Clark spent his early boyhood on a farm just a few miles from Thomas Jefferson's Monticello. At the age of 20, he moved to Kentucky, where he garnered a reputation as a military leader. He began his career as an Indian fighter and later in life gained the friendship and respect of the Native Americans who had been his former enemies. He is considered a hero of the American Revolution, where the greatest of his accomplishments was to capture the British-held forts of Kaskaskia, Cahokia, and Vincennes. After his military service ended, Clark received 150,000 acres of land for his contribution to the war, but he struggled to maintain it. Unsuccessful at this, he lost most of the land and opened a small grist mill in Clarksville, Indiana, which provided a moderate income. In 1805, he was named to the board of directors of the Indiana Canal Company, whose mission was to build a canal around the nearby falls of the Ohio River. His good fortune at obtaining this position didn't last long. Two of the other directors, including Vice President Aaron Burr, illegally plotted to seize Louisiana from Spain in order to open the Mississippi River to the Americans. In the process, $2.5 million of the company's money, $65 million in today's dollars, turned up missing. Clark was not involved. Burr and the other director, Davis Floyd, were arrested for treason and the Indiana Canal Company folded. A grisly incident in 1809 turned Clark into an invalid for the remainder of his life. Age 57 at the time, he suffered a stroke and fell into an open fireplace. He was unable to move, and his leg burned so badly it required removal. When his doctor performed the amputation, the only so-called anesthetic Clark received was music from a fife and drum corps playing in the background. Clark lived with the crippling effects of the stroke and amputation until his death in 1818. Like his famous brother William of Lewis and Clark fame, George Rogers Clark was a Freemason. Although his original lodge is unknown, Abraham Lodge No. 8, Louisville, conducted his Masonic funeral. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, always enjoy those awesome pieces by Brother Stephen L. Harrison, who puts together these pieces for us every other week, and they're just fantastic. Lodges use these as primers. They play them at Bring a Potential Candidate Night. They watch the videos. He makes videos for a good number of these, and they're up on his YouTube channel. We mirror them on our YouTube channel, on WCY Podcast on YouTube. Subscribe, and you'll get the episodes and all of those extra pieces that Steve puts together for us. They're all there, and you can check them out and make a playlist and pop that up next time you guys have a lodge dinner. Have them playing in the background. They're just great. They're wonderful stories, and we can't thank Brother Steve enough for putting those together for us. If you head on over to WCYpodcast.com, one of the things you can do is hover over the From Us to You. You can click on the bookshop, and when you go there, you can look for Steve Harrison's books, and there'll be links to all of those, which will take you back to Amazon.com, where you can pick up a few of those, whether in print, which is kind of a rarity on some of them, and they are expensive if you can find them, but more importantly, you can find them digitally, and so you can get them on the Kindle or the Nook or whatever your device just happens to be, but the Kindle versions are all there too. Speaking of books, John Ruark and I wrote a book called It's Business Time, where we adapt corporate paths for Freemasonry. Well, we are taking some time-tested great techniques that businesses have used, and some of them are kind of holistic. That's my style, right? And John really attacks the finite ideas of lean and acquisition and all of these great concepts. And I talk about how to win friends and influence people. We had a great time writing this. It's got great reviews. It was number one on several categories, and it still is on some categories on Amazon, which is pretty crazy for a concise book about a chosen select number of leadership / business techniques. There's like hundreds, maybe even thousands of books that get published on leadership every week on Amazon.com. It was really amazing to see that we stuck it out as number one for a while, and we still are number one in several categories. Now, if you're interested in this book, head on over to Amazon.com and just type It's Business Time and Freemasonry and it'll pop up. But if you want to go ahead and if you want to get it autographed, if you're in the DC area, then you're going to shoot John an email and he'll take care of you. But if you just want to grab it from my site, you can do that as well. You can just come on the website, WCYpodcast.com, and you can click on it if you go to the limited edition shop. Now, when you come on the website, you can click on it and the image there will take you to Amazon. But if you hover over the support the show and you click on limited edition shop, scroll to the bottom and you'll see it right there. It'll say It's Business Time autographed, and that'll come autographed by me. John couldn't autograph this last set of books, so it's just my autograph. I understand if you don't just want one, but it's there for you if you'd like it. And speaking of supporting the show, that is how this program comes to you. Hover over support the show. You can click on make a donation. You can make a one-time donation of a dollar, 50 cents, whatever it is. It helps out the show immensely. But you could also become a monthly contributor, whether that's $2 a month for a contributor. We do a fellow at $5 a month, and there's a producer level at $10 a month. Basically, all that money just goes right into producing this program and making sure that all of the episodes stay available forever. So we don't have any kind of backlog that's available for any kind of premium or anything. It's just all available for everybody all the time, because that's what Masonic education really is. It should be there. It should be available for all people all the time. And I really appreciate everybody who's out there doing those. Regardless of your contribution level, it makes a ridiculous difference. So thank you so much. We also have our affiliates that stand by us through thick and thin. The Great Books Program by Brother Scott Hambrick. If you want to check that out, please click on that link and head on over to his website. You can learn more about the Great Books Program there. Also, we did an interview with Brother Scott Hambrick just a few weeks ago. Check out that episode if you want to learn a little bit more in depth. Now, the Great Books Program, I believe, is full. You will need to wait for the next enrollment if you are interested. Another one of our great affiliates, Bankers Best. Levi Bankers, the guy who owns this, he's a brother out of St. Louis. I've met him. We've talked. He is obsessed with quality and obsessed with offering the best there is. There are imitators out there, but there's only one Bankers Best. So if you head on over to WCYpodcast.com, check that out, hover over, support the show, click on Bankers Best, and read about some of our great things that he's got, especially some things that might interest the Mason. Are you a bearded Mason? Maybe you need some beard balm. Maybe you need some King Solomon's Reserve beard oil. Yes, he created a wonderful beard oil, which actually we collaborated on. Even a brother did the artwork for it. It's a fantastic product, smells awesome. And we talked, and I said, well, if you could do something that would be kind of related to exactly what would have been available at the time of King Solomon, so thousands of years ago, what would have been available for something like this? And so we put together this really cool thing. So it's an original beard oil and balm recipe with a fragrance specific to the exports of King Solomon's time and location. So it's black fig and honey, and it's a luxurious scent, and as Levi says, truly fit for our first Grandmaster. So check that out. If you use the promo code BBWCY357 at checkout, you're going to get a percentage off, and the show gets a little kickback, and that's how you help support us. We also have onnit.com. If you hover over our link there, click through the links to get there. That's how they know you found them, through us. Use the promo code WCY at checkout, and you'll get 10% off your order. It's not a ton, but it usually covers the shipping, which is FedEx, so it's pretty nice. That's it for helping the show out. I should mention that not only does this help the program, but when we've got a little extra sometimes, that money doesn't sit there. We use it, and we do things like creating some great things, like remastered Manly P. Hall's lectures. I took a collection of 23 of Manly P. Hall's lectures, downloaded from the web in their raw form, and you've all heard these. You can go on YouTube and you can listen to these things, but a lot of times they sound like garbage. There's a lot of white noise. You can hear the room around, and you can't hear Hall that great. But within these lectures, we have totally removed most of the white noise, like 95% of it, and his voice comes through like you wouldn't believe. And so I hope you guys check those out. 23 of those lectures are available, and you can just, from us to you, hover over that, click on the remastered Manly P. Hall's lecture, and click on his photograph, and it'll take you right to a Google Drive. Now again, these are hosted for free, but if you want to give back, then consider making a donation to the Philosophical Research Society, which was founded by Hall, or the Cure Epilepsy Foundation. How does Manly P. Hall's voice sound? Check this out.
The symbolic factors with which we are to be concerned. The possible relationship between astronomy and religion has been so often discussed that nearly all Bible students, the students of comparative religion, are aware that such analogies or parallels do exist.
Sounds pretty clean, right? So I know you guys are excited. Go check those out. We also offered a digital lodge listing for the United States in beta, of course. It's a Excel-based slicer tool that I put together, just grabbing the lists from the different Grand Lodge websites. So you can check that out. That was something else we did and made available because of the donations. But enough about all that. Let's get into this week's last piece. And this one is called Three Distinct Knocks by Midnight Freemason guest contributor Martin O'Brien, who is a worshipful master. In this piece, it's almost a narrative, and he takes us through the process of becoming a Mason. So let's check this out. I want you to put yourself, if you're available, if you can do it, so not in the car, not while you're driving, which you might be doing if you are listening to this on a Monday morning on your commute, but if you're just sitting back and you got your headphones on, let's try something out. Close your eyes, clear your mind. I'll give you a second. All right, here we go. Envision, if you will, a young man, a man who has grown up in a relative financial and material comfort, but in moral and spiritual ambiguity. Understand that this man that I am describing is not me, but I can tell his story. You may even know him or another person like him. This man, at least he believes himself a man, no event in his life apart from the tearing of pages from a calendar has marked his transition from adolescence to manhood, comes from good stock. Salt of the earth people who were faithful to their creed and mindful of harder times, struggles that they have strived to shelter their son from. This young man is popular and has surrounded himself with friends of like mind and opinion. Perhaps this man has had the benefit of formal education beyond high school and so feels that he knows much. And because life has been gentle on him, he's faced no adversity to inform him otherwise. He believes that he doesn't need superstitious religion because he has reason. He is comfortable, more passive than purposeful in his decision-making. He goes easily where the tides of life take him. He does what his job requires of him, no more, no less, because he invests his time and energy more fully in leisure pursuits, marking time through the week to get to the weekend, and when he arrives, he imbibes too much and makes morally questionable decisions. Perhaps he treats the fairer sex disrespectfully, allowing his passions to hold sway over that reason that he values over religion. Perhaps he has no male role model to show him there is another and better way. He lives his life in a repetitious cycle, monotonous week to intemperate weekend over and over again. This pattern is reinforced by his circle of friends, all of whom are equally adrift, until one day he sees something, a sign on an old brick building, an ancient sign that hints at a different way, a different path the wanderer can take. This sign pulls at something in his mind, perhaps the prick of conscience. As this feeling comes to the fore, a faint spark flickers in his chest and draws him toward that symbol. Walking forward, he begins to leave behind the chaos and apathy that have marked his life to this point, and he moves eastward toward something better. He gets the sense that he is drawing closer to something important, and his excitement grows, but still there is a shroud around the place he wishes to be, and he is filled with an uncertainty and trepidation. Yet, that spark, flickering weakly in his chest, draws him onwards, and soon the veil parts slightly, revealing a gate guarded by stern-faced sentinels that bar his way. They examine this traveler. The probing eyes, experienced from long years of labor in the quarries beyond, search for any sign of dishonesty or impure motive. Their examination is thorough, and they can see that the faint lights inside our supplicant, and it is this that assures them of his sincerity. They step aside, allowing him to advance through the west gate. Once through a portico, he is met by gentle hands, welcoming him in friendship, guiding his steps lest he should falter. He is reassured and told to fear no evil, for evil cannot take root in this place. He is prepared for what is about to transpire. Taking off the trappings of the world, he is beginning to leave behind and pass a threshold into a new way of being. He is given some time, a few moments in which to gather himself and prepare his mind to receive the priceless gift that awaits him. He is in darkness by design, his vision taken away, the better to align his other senses. He is guided forward until his outstretched hands meet with obstruction, a door. He is told to reach for the heavy brass knocker that adorns it, and taking it firmly, strike the door with it 3 distinct times. His hand is shaking with nervous anticipation. As it reaches for it, his fingers can trace the shape, the same symbol he found on the side of the building. The square encompasses. The knocker rises and falls. 1. Farewell to apathy. Farewell to the chaos of selfish and disordered thinking. He lifts it again. More forcefully this time, the knocker hits the strike plate. 2. As the sound of it fades away, so does the man he was. He is already changed. A third time, his hand rises. This is perhaps the first purposeful act he has undertaken, the first real movement towards taking responsibility for himself and his place in this world. 3. The door opens. Though blindfolded, he is aware that light is shining on him from within, and that spark in his chest, that was once so weak, flares brightly. Worshipful Brother Martin O'Brien, past master of Cuyahoga Falls Lodge No. 735, now Star Lodge 187 in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, member of the chapter there, as well as the Council of Royal and Select Masters. All right, I hope you enjoyed that piece. I thought it was very well written and a great narrative that really takes us through this kind of experience that we all had and really serves, I hope in this way, that it was meditative for you in some respects. Now, if you like Masonic podcasts, I know you do, you're listening to this one, please consider checking out the Masonic Roundtable, which goes live on Tuesday nights at 10/9 Central. You can hear from Jason Richards, John Ruark, Juan Sepulveda, myself, and Brother Mike Hambricht, or Mikey the Intern, as we like to call him. He was under the weather last week, so hope to have him on it. So we miss him. So Mikey, if you're listening, hope you're on the show this Tuesday. And if you like to read about Freemasonry, please check out the Midnight Freemasons, themidnightfreemasons.org or at .com. You can check out either or, where we publish 3 articles every single week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. If you're listening to this on Sunday evening, great. If you're listening to this on Monday, well, chances are there's a Memorial Day post right there, right on the Midnight Freemasons. And that's it for this week, guys. But before we close out, let's take a moment of silence for Memorial Day, for everybody who gave that ultimate sacrifice. Until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.